Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Kyle Schwarber is 1-for-9 career against Rich Hill with 3 strikeouts. But we have found out lately it doesn't matter if it's righty or lefty the way he's going.
Oh, my! I can't believe it! See you later! Come on!
There are no more get-me-over fastballs to start baseball games when Kyle Schwarber's in the leadoff spot.
Who's going to get me over the fence? Kyle Schwarber still has more home runs than any Cub. And there you go. That was credit to MASN on that highlight. Welcome in, welcome back. This is hour 5 of the Suckathon today. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, and it is holiday suckage for you. We go to the Scores Hotline. That hotline is presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome into the show just a young man with a wonderful, wonderful Twitter follow because it lives up to the name MLB Random Stats. And what could be more random than a recent tweet of most home runs against a first name in a season, and the leader is Ted Williams, hit 12 home runs in 1941 off anybody named Johnny. I just love that. Jeremy Frank, thanks for coming on. Welcome to the Score, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So, you started this when you were 15, right? This website?
Yeah, I was actually 14, but October 2015.
Okay. And calling it, you called it MLB Random Stats because...
Well, that's kind of just what I wanted to post. I didn't want to be too tied down to posting anything that would be too relevant to anything going on. Well, I do post some kind of things that may be relevant. I also like to just kind of find some random facts, and if anyone finds them interesting, hope that they enjoy them.
And we were the random stats give you, as you tweeted recently, plausible deniability. When people want to complain about stuff, that you can just say, hey, I'm not lying to you. That's what it was. And there's a wonderful example. You recently tweeted Shohei Ohtani is the first player in MLB history with 30 home runs and 12 stolen bases through 76 games. And a follower commented, 4 LOLs, making up stats now. Got it. He's also the first to give up 7 runs in a start, then hit a home run number 30 and stolen 12 bases. Let's add some more ridiculousness to it. To which Jeremy Frank retweeted, buddy, do I have news for you. And there's a whole book called The Hidden Ball Trick. The Hidden Ball Trick is what for our audience, Jeremy?
Yeah, so me and my friend Jim Passan, he's also a great follow on Twitter, at Passan Jim. We decided that since we've had so many random stats that we found throughout, not just recent baseball years like the one you said about Ohtani, but also just throughout baseball history, we decided it would be really cool to try and organize them into one spot. So Hidden Ball Trick Volume 1 looks at the best random stats from the years 1876 until 1919, which was like the dead ball era of baseball's history. And then the second volume goes from 1920 until 1969, which is kind of like they changed the mound after Gibson's great 68 season. And then Volume 3 is still in the works right now. But if you're interested in learning about the history of baseball through kind of a statistical perspective, I definitely would recommend checking them out.
I noticed that in catching up on stuff, Jeremy, as you wrote, the questioning the Aroldis Chapman making the All-Star game. Have you any random facts of Aroldis Chapman, and do any of does the sticky stuff change random facts for you?
Oh yeah, it's definitely been interesting. I haven't been able to look too far into Chapman's All-Star nod, because to be honest, I didn't even see he made the team until today. I've kind of been off the Wi-Fi for last couple of days for the weekend. But apparently they voted on it a few weeks ago before he kind of collapsed, which is really interesting because that's kind of when they changed the rules for pitchers. But I've seen that his spin rate's been down a little bit. His velocity is still the elite velocity that Chapman's been known for. But I can't imagine that there have been many pitchers with higher than his 4.71 ERA to make the All-Star game after that kind of first half. And I know most of it. I mean, he was really good for first 2.5 months of the season. But I think since they started enforcing the sticky substances ban, I think he has like the most runs allowed for a relief pitcher, like the highest ERA of any pitcher. So it's written like a tale of two different segments of the season for Chapman, and he kind of just got lucky that, number one, his name is Aroldis Chapman, and he's known for being a very good relief pitcher, and also that they voted on it right when he was like at the peak of his season.
Our guest is Jeremy Frank. He runs the Twitter site MLB Random Stats. He wrote the book Hidden Ball Trick, co-wrote the book Hidden Ball Trick, and it's just a wonderful collection of baseball facts. Jeremy, if you don't mind, if it's not impolite to ask a young man his age, how old are you?
I'm 20. I turned 20 in February. I guess I'll turn 21
ridiculous.
Next February.
And you were attending Purdue?
Yep, I'll be a junior in college at Purdue next year.
Okay. You've also appeared on with Jason Benetti, our very own Jason Benetti, doing a baseball game, sort of the StatCast version of it, right? Didn't you do that last year when they were casting about for anything that looked like a sport?
Yeah, it was for the Korean baseball when there was no MLB going on. He and Jessica Mendoza were calling one of the games, and they do this book club segment where they just talk about books because they need to fill in time because they obviously know much less about Korean baseball than they do about MLB, so they need stuff to talk about. So obviously they need enough material that they were willing to invite me on the show and talk about my book, Cool Half Innings. But it was a great experience. I got to wake up at like 3:30 a.m. and tune into a Korean baseball game, but it was a lot of fun.
That's funny. So, Jeremy, now I'm curious. You're at Purdue. You're a junior. What are you majoring in at Purdue? And what is it that you'd like to do with your life, Jeremy Frank? Or are you doing it right now with your 74,000 followers?
Yeah, so I'm studying data science at Purdue, which is pretty fitting for what I'm interested in, which is, like, you know, as my Twitter shows, just very random statistics, which is kind of just what data science is. It's a really nice growing field in our world today. But I'm not really sure what I want to do. I really enjoy running my Twitter account. And obviously, right now I'm interning at Sports Reference. They host like Baseball Reference, Basketball Reference, all of those sites with all these statistics on players, which I'm sure you guys have visited before, which has definitely been a really great experience this summer. But I definitely want to work in sports. That would be really cool, working with sports data when I'm older. I really enjoy running my Twitter handle kind of as like a side thing. I don't really make any money besides from my book. But it's really fun to just have, like, when I have free time to just tweet about these random statistics, which so many people care about, apparently.
Yes, they do. MLB Random Stats is the Twitter site. Jeremy Frank is our guest. So as somebody who has yet to be able to buy a legal drink, we hear about baseball's youth problem and everybody old and baseball's audience is going to die. And how did you come to this? You would be a significant baseball fan to not just get into the players, but the names, but the different ways to parse it, to break it down, to look at it. You would seem to be an outlier according to some conventional wisdom. How did you come to this and to embrace it this way, Jeremy?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say baseball is dying. I know a lot of people will be quick to say that, but like when I was growing up, all my friends played Little League baseball. Obviously I didn't know what it was 20 years ago, but it seems like most of my friends were interested in baseball and still are. Maybe that's just the group of friends that I chose to associate myself with, but a lot of people growing up played baseball, and my mom's a big Cubs fan, my dad's a big White Sox fan, so they raised me to be a big baseball fan. My favorite subject growing up in school was math. So the angle that I kind of approach it, like my two favorite things, baseball and like statistics, kind of work really well with baseball specifically compared to other sports. And then like growing up collecting baseball cards, you have all these numbers on the back. So it was really just a nice like gateway into not only just playing the sport as a kid, like growing up, but also being a fan of it.
Yeah, it's. Now I'm looking at some of your tweets here. You must help Jason Benetti with White Sox math, because most home runs times stolen bases times games started, AL plus NL since 1900. Go.
Yeah, that's such a I don't know if you know Chris Kamka. I'm sure you know him, but I know he does a lot of stuff very similar to me. I know I'm pretty sure he's the guy behind Sox math, but I've never won it. We try. My roommates at school are big White Sox fans, so we always try and win it. But our TV was like a split second behind, so we would never be able. That's our excuse. We're never able to pull it off. But I really want to get one of my videos on there and just razz Jason. He's a great guy, though.
So when you were on television, you were on with Jason and Jessica Mendoza doing a game, and they were talking about your book, Hidden Ball Trick. Did you miss class that day? Did you have class that day? Do you give an excuse like, I'm sorry, I was on TV, I couldn't make this assignment?
Well, luckily for me, I'm pretty sure first it was like a Sunday morning, but also I was at home because unfortunately COVID had cut my semester short. So I'm pretty sure like it was during the weekend. My sleep schedule was screwed up for a little bit, because I wasn't sure if I was supposed to like stay up until like 4:30 is just a really hard time for me, like a teenager at the time, to just be awake for. So I wasn't sure if I was supposed to stay up or just like wake up. But my sleep schedule was a little screwed up, but I didn't have to give an excuse with school or anything, luckily.
Hey, Jeremy, what do you make of Shohei Ohtani, and how helpful has he been to what you do, considering random stats? I bet he is just a fountain of material for you.
Oh yeah, he's so fun to watch. Like, forgetting baseball stats, like he's the most exciting player I've seen in my lifetime. He's just so good at not only just, I mean, he's got the power to like with like anyone else in baseball, and he can pitch really well, and also he's one of the fastest players in the league. It's just crazy that he has a skill set that no one else in pretty much the league's history has ever had. So it's been really cool watching him play. And I really think, going back to what you were saying about the youth sports problem, I think Shohei could be a really good way to kind of get young fans interested, because up until him, it's been really kind of the understanding that no one's going to be a two-way player in baseball. But I think with little leaguers watching Shohei play, I think they'll kind of see it as something that they could end up doing. And I think maybe in 15, 20 years, we could see kind of a resurgence in this kind of thing in the sport, hopefully.
Well, he actually is a little leaguer, because he's made the All-Star team as both a pitcher and a position player. That's a very little league thing to be able
to
do.
And his dad's not even the coach of the team.
Nicely played.
And he's outshining Mike Trout. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, Trout's injury obviously helps, but I think when Trout comes back, I think people are still watching Angels games to watch Shohei Ohtani. It's like their lineup is really good, and he is like the best like hitter in that lineup. I mean, he's hitting better than Trout, his career averages, which is crazy. Like, everyone thought Ohtani would be good, but like hitting better, like he's been a replacement for Trout, but he's been better than Trout was, like his career averages at least.
Jeremy Frank of MLB Random Stats, before we let you go, I want to ask, in your book, Hidden Ball Trick, what is the favorite stat you uncovered? What is your favorite line stat, however you want to break it down, in that book?
Oh, man, that's really tough, because I don't have my book on me right now. But one thing that I really, one of my favorite statistics that I think, it wasn't super random, but just because it was a super, like, older stat, it kind of was off the page. Rogers Hornsby, he was, I mean, a Hall of Fame player and like an all-time great, but I feel like he's kind of underrated when people talk about kind of the legends of the sports. But I think he's one of the best hitters of all time, like the best second baseman of all time. But in 1924, the Cardinals, the team he was on, they had double headers in consecutive days. So they played four games in 2 days, and Hornsby went 13-for-14 with four doubles and two homers and a walk. So he had 929, and the Cardinals only went 2-2 in that span, which I think is one of my favorite stats, because even back then, you could hit pretty much perfectly for these four games that you played, and still it's a team sport, and I think that's my favorite thing about baseball.
Wow. Wow. That's it. You had 929, we only split. Oh, my goodness. Sounds like a Cub today. If only they could find somebody to hit 929. Jeremy, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Good luck good luck in reaching your 21st year, and good luck graduating, and you just embarrass us all. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Have a good one.
All right, Jeremy Frank on Twitter at MLB Random Stats. His book, Hidden Ball Trick, it's just great. If you're into baseball and Ilya, it's wonderful. And he's just one of the things he did we didn't talk about, he had recently listed the heaviest pinch runners since 1901. Because
awesome.
A couple Mondays ago, Miguel Sano pinch ran 273 pounds. He came in as a pinch runner in the eighth. He doubled home a run in the 10th and then blasted a walk-off two-run homer in the 12th. Heaviest pinch runner ever was Calvin Pickering, 283 pounds, 6'5", played for Baltimore. He had one stolen base. He did that in 99. Aaron Judge, he was a pinch runner, 282 pounds. And making the list, July 9th, we're almost at the anniversary, as a pinch runner, 6'4", Carlos Zambrano.
How about that?
275
pounds. Big Z.
He had one stolen base in 12 seasons and one grand slam on Michael Barrett's face. Okay, we're done with that.
Actually, Zambrano could run. I mean, he was one of the—he was like the big guy athlete. You know what I mean? Like he could probably dunk a basketball. But he was quick, fast, and athlete, and the best of those three pitchers: Kerry Wood, Mark Pryor, and Carlos Zambrano. Hot take.
Don't get in his way. Mm-mm. Oh my God. Okay, 847 texter had heard the classic film line. Yes, I'll have what she's having. It's on the list, on our AFI list.
Top 20, isn't it?
It is.
Come on,
number 33. It's Scottie Pippen, number 33. Without the charge of racism.
Yeah. Idiots. Yeah, without that. Yep.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, it's time for What Are You Doing, Wegner? Even on a holiday suckage, we'll do Wegner. We have some rock music for you, and we have, it may be the last time to do this, maybe the world's biggest Montreal Canadiens fan. We'll make that connection. And I saw something in the College World Series that I thought was, I don't think it'll ever catch on, but it was great to see it once. So we'll share that in What Are You Doing, Wegner? Holiday suckage for you. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, thank you for joining us. Thank you for ignoring us. We're proud to be here. We'll suck so you don't have to. So you can have the holiday weekend you deserve. It's just us being American heroes. Don't pay any attention over here. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What are you doing, Wegner?
That's what we're doing. Hour five of the 5 hour suckathon. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. Holiday suckage on this Monday, July 5th. Welcome in, welcome back. I wanted to, in doing Wegner, it's just a variety of things that we just sort of collect and I wanted to share. And remember earlier we were talking about trying to place Chris Bryant's full house, the three homers and two doubles in Cincinnati? Remember that game, Mark?
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about
that. I was there.
Yes, you were. Here, you were there for this memory, too. Because my friend Chris Bogosian of the Chicago Tribune had texted at me when we were having this discussion that he was at those games. He took his then 8-year-old son to that game. And the next day, he took him to the Montgomery Inn Boathouse for lunch, per Gonzo's suggestion, our Tribune friend Mark Gonzalez, former Tribune friend. And who was there? None other than Gonzo and Mark Rohde. So Bogues and his eight-year-old son, stopped by, said hello,
mm-hmm.
and you guys were nice. And then after they were done eating, they walked downstairs to leave, and there was Pete Rose just sitting down for lunch.
Oh, yeah, I think you did tell me this, yes.
Bogue says, we went over and talked to him, got a picture of him with my son. Pete told my son the Cubs would never win at all. Unfortunately, we didn't bet on it, Bogue says. But wait, there's more. 10 minutes later, they're driving toward the team hotel, and my son says, Dad, there's Jake Arrieta. And sure enough, Jake was getting out of a cab outside of a Starbucks. So I pull over and park illegally, and my son walks into Starbucks and gets his autograph. That was when Jake was good Jake, coming off his Cy Young Award in 2015. Then we parked by the team hotel, and my son proceeded to get all kinds of autographs. Ross and Hendricks, Hughes and Casper and Coomer, Rizzo and Russell. Greatest father-son trip ever.
Wow. Gets better and better. It's like
it does.
You start low, you know, and then you build your way up, you know.
Don't say start low. It's you and Gonzo. That's top shelf.
That's true. Yeah, Gonzo anyway. He's deluxe. But, yeah, Gonzo was the one that introduced me to the Montgomery Inn at the Boathouse in Cincinnati. A great, like, if you need a recommendation, Chicagoans who go to Cincinnati, and you do go to Cincinnati for Cubs games, go to Montgomery Inn. And it like, Gonzo, like, he loads up on, like, he buys, because they make their own sauce. He loads up on it, buys the sauce, and he swore by it, and we went there, and I'll be damned if he wasn't right about Montgomery Inn. Really good barbecue in Cincinnati.
Oh, it's barbecue sauce. Okay, I wasn't sure what kind of food we were talking. It could have been.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry,
I didn't make that clear. Italian and yeah.
Yes. Okay. No, you're right. It Montgomery Inn barbecue is what it is. Right. So great rib, but it's all, as with many barbecue joints, what distinguishes it, or what can distinguish it, is the taste or originality of the actual sauce.
Yes.
And it is, I can tell you, it is excellent at Montgomery Inn. So there you go. You're welcome.
Or is the rec ribs? Is it brisket? Is it pulled pork? What is it?
All of it. What's the best? The ribs
like
are the best.
Fat podcast.
Yeah, no, but the ribs are, to me, that was the most deluxe part of it. I'd have to ask Gonzo what his go-to order was, because I don't remember. But I always just got and it was always lunch that we were doing, because you know we had a game to cover at night. So there's really nothing worse than getting bloated at lunch and then still having your whole day and night to go. So that was usually what went down. And we did not have the benefit of many day games, unless it was a Sunday, but that would be a getaway day. So
yeah, I always love the idea of a food coma nap. And being denied that is, it seems counterproductive otherwise to do what you guys were trying to do, or even trying not to do, but you did it anyways and overdoing it. But I respect you guys for that.
It's hard to get a salad when you go to a barbecue joint and try to monitor oneself. You know, I mean, you're going to go dive in and get the extra sauce on the side and then walk out of there with a couple bottles of sauce.
Remember the meat on Spears place we went to when we went to when we went out to dinner? Meat on Spears.
Yes, it was. Place. Was it Fogo de Chão that we went to?
Yeah.
I can't even remember. Fogo
de Chão. We went there, and we were there bringing Spears of meat. Well, that's usually the place that Brandon chooses to have his birthday dinner, and his bride Emily, sweet Emily, always has a salad and goes to the salad bar. Son, I do not know how you could marry this woman. We're at a meat place. It's meat on Spears, and she's eating the lawn. It's just not wrong. It's not the way it should be.
No, I do remember that when you and I went there, and this was like 2018, I want to say, and I actually suggested too that we start, because it, like, those places do have incredible salad bars, and it's by design, so you don't eat all the meat, you know? Like, they don't want you to eat all your meat. So they are better than the – it's not just lawn. But I do remember going there with you, and I said, should we get – and before I could even get it on my own, you're like, no, let's put these chips on green, and let's roll the cart. Let's get the meat coming. And you were right. That was a good philosophy you had.
I don't want anything taking up space when there's lamb chops available. That's just
no, you're right.
Gonna go.
You're right.
So we celebrated America's Independence Day yesterday, the 245th anniversary of the independence, signing of the Declaration of Independence. So in 1976, the bicentennial, there was much made of it. And in rock music, according to Ultimate Classic Rock, a website, they had listed to the acts. This was really stunning what the country did musically to celebrate, and especially when now we're just getting used to COVID is now allowed, it's diminishing. We're allowed to come out and go to the places, ball games, but concerts, things like that. So Elvis Presley performed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which seems okay. That's Elvis for you.
Okay.
He was performing his hits, you know, Hound Dogs, Jailhouse Rock. He did a cover of Olivia Newton-John's If You Love Me, Let Me Know. That's a song that fits Elvis. I mean, the lyric, if you, all you heard was the title. But the idea of Elvis covering an Olivia Newton-John song, that just, does that strike you as weird?
No more weird than one of the guys we talked about earlier, Johnny Cash covering Nine Inch Nails. I'm never blown away by what artists cover anymore, because it seems like there's always some irony involved. Or wow, that band is covering that song. It is surprising, yes, but it's not as surprising as it once was, because many artists seem to go outside of their lane these days.
Yeah. So in 1976. The bicentennial, Elton John appeared in concert in Foxborough, Massachusetts. He donned a bedazzled Lady Liberty outfit, ripped off his crown, then his robe, and he revealed a blue t-shirt, red, white, and blue satin basketball shorts in an American flag motif. And
wow.
You've seen pictures of this. The name of this tour was Louder Than Concord, But Not Quite As Pretty Tour. That was the name of the tour.
Yeah, the description you gave doesn't sound particularly pretty. I'm not sure how much.
No, it doesn't. So, and he's honest about it. All right, he's not lying to you.
Good for him.
Bruce Springsteen and his East Street band played a small impromptu club show at the Stone Pony in Asbury
Stone
Park,
Pony,
New Jersey. That was the club that launched his career. I did not know that. The Stone Pony.
Neither did I.
Does Steve Stone know that?
That's right. Yeah, Steve Stone.
We discussed this earlier, the Tampa show. We discussed this earlier with Scott Merkin.
Yes.
In Tampa, the Eagles headlined a bill that also included Fleetwood Mac, Loggins and Messina, and Dan Fogelberg. And
Dan Fogelberg.
Remember, this is Dan Fogelberg, yeah, 1976. The Eagles had released their massively successful greatest hits album earlier in the year, 1976. And here we are in 2021, and they're still playing. Some version of them are still playing, but they did the, okay.
When hell freezes over, my friend, when hell freezes over.
Yeah, that's right, and that was the name of the tour. So Rockford Speedway held a rock show, and Head East, Rick Derringer, Mahogany Rush, Ted Nugent, and Foghat played it in Rockford Speedway.
Sweet.
Would you have gone for that?
Give me the band. So who is it again?
Jeff Beck was on the bill, but he didn't play. He played somewhere else. So Head East, it's a group I'd never heard of. Rick Derringer, I heard of him.
Uh-huh.
Mahogany Rush, Frank Marino, I heard of him. Ted Nugent, I certainly heard of him. Cat Scratch Fever, and Foghat.
I mean, I'd go, but I wouldn't go out of my way to. If somebody was like, hey, Mark, I got an extra ticket. You want to go to this concert? Then I would go. But
you'd have to go to Rockford. Would you go to Rockford?
Yeah, I'd have to go to Rockford, too. But I don't have a problem with Rockford. It's like, if there was a great show in Rockford, I'd go to Rockford. No problem at all. But no, that right, on the surface, Steve, no. What about you? Would you?
No. No. I might go to this. No. I might go to Memphis, Tennessee. ZZ Top was headlining a bill that included Lynyrd Skynyrd, Blue Oyster Cult,
okay,
The Outlaws, and Point Blank. And this was a special, notable ZZ Top tour. It was the Worldwide Texas Tour, which was huge. It included actual livestock on stage.
Wow.
Yes.
That sounds horrible.
There's a great documentary about ZZ Top, because they're such an iconic band and so, you know,
seen it,
so
yeah.
Curious about it. So this was on the 4th of July in 1976, the bicentennial. Billy Gibbons was talking about it. It was an elaborate tour, even for the time. It was extremely expensive. We weren't big enough to do that, and everybody told us, but we did it. So there's livestock on stage.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Here's the show. Here's some cows.
Yeah.
And there's some sheep. I do like ZZ Top, though. I mean, how could you not like Eliminator?
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I'm all for it. You play Legs, you play Sharp Dressed Man, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So 50 years ago Saturday, we did the show Saturday. We did not mention this. Jim Morrison died. 50th anniversary of Jim Morrison.
Wow. Okay. That's your guy. That's your man.
Yeah, that was the Doors. I just love them. I love their music. I'm sorry he went and did that. And then I remembered years later, I wrote a syndicated show, radio show based on pop music, and we interviewed Ray Manzarek, and he was spreading the idea of maybe Jim faked his death, maybe he could do that, you know. And I go, oh my god, this is too big for me, I don't want to deal with this. But that was that. Here's something in What Are You Doing, Wagner, in 19, this is as Chris Kamka as it gets, the Sultan of the Stat at NBC Sports Chicago.
Yeah.
And this was as of yesterday. In 1953, Sam Mealy of the White Sox hit his fourth home run of the season in the fourth inning while batting fourth in the order on the 4th of July.
Mm.
Did you get all that?
Yeah.
Did you get all that? Okay.
It definitely...
The Montreal Canadiens season could end tonight. You know who the biggest Canadian fan is, perhaps? J.J. Watt.
Really?
J.J. Watt was that, going back to when the Canadiens were playing the Maple Leaf of Toronto, the Canadiens needed help. And J.J. Watt tweeted out, looks like we could use a little more Cole Caulfield. Cole Caulfield had won the Hobey Baker Award is the best, you know, the Heisman of hockey, college hockey. And he did it for Wisconsin. So they've got, they're Badgers, wow, their fellow Badgers. But there's J.J. Watt tweeting, the Canadiens-Leafs game could use some Cole Caulfield. And Cole Caulfield's brother sees it during the game, goes, do you know what, this is the guy they idolized, Cole Caulfield of the Canadiens. And his brother idolized J.J. Watt, and there's J.J. Watt saying, play him, get him out there. It was terrific.
Man, that's connecting dots right there, Stevie.
So yeah, sorry. So Caulfield drew into the lineup in Game 3 and scored. He got his first playoff point, assisted on the Canadiens' Game 5 overtime winner, and J.J. Watt took to his keyboard again, and tweeted out, you're welcome at Canadians MTL. So he's taking credit for all this. I think that's great. I just love that. There's somebody they idolized. It was just a wonderful thing. So William Shatner, you've heard of him, right?
I have. He is Captain Kirk.
Yeah. He was asked by a Twitter follower, out of everybody you've worked with, who surprised you the most and why? And William Shatner's answer was, me, because I put up with all those people.
Wow.
Yeah. Hello.
That's like the old Saturday Night Live skit. Remember that? Where there's a Star Trek convention, and he's up there. He's hosting Saturday Night Live, and it's a Star Trek convention, and all these, like, dorks wearing their Spock ears, and they've got, you know, all the Star Trek outfits, and he basically gets up there and goes, you people need to get a life. You guys are crazy. And then he, once they realizes that everybody has lost their minds, is, oh, that was that was evil, evil Captain Kirk from episode, from season 7, episode 5.
I did not see that. I do not remember that.
Okay. Check it out.
All right. Okay.
Sorry. This is your segment.
So, no, it's not. It's just, it's our segment. It's just bringing a variety of things like this.
It's ours.
Mississippi State won the College World Series, beat Vanderbilt. But not before Preston Johnson gave up a home run and had himself a moment. I don't know, some player on Vanderbilt hit a home run, and it was clearly a home run. And the Mississippi State pitcher, Preston Johnson, the camera caught him waving goodbye to the ball. It's on its arc, and as the batter has left the batter's box, you can see Preston Johnson just waving goodbye to the ball. This is a pitcher. I don't think this will catch on, but I think it's great that that's what happened. Yeah.
See ya.
Yeah, that's it. Okay.
I got a quick recommendation since I alluded to this earlier, but since we've talked a decent amount of music today, and I started to talk about this, but just a quick, because we all need a recommendation. There's so many shows, you need to narrow it down a little bit. If you're a music fan, This Is Pop on Netflix is really good. It talks about, it has like a bunch of parts, like the Boys to Men effect, When Country Goes Pop, Brit Pop. Like, you'll learn stuff. Like, I feel like I know a lot about music and stuff, but like you, and they're all like very easy, like 30 to 40 minute episodes. So just from me to you, if you need a little something, a little music break, This Is Pop on Netflix.
And is it episodic?
Yeah. They're documentary style for the most part, but they're just like little stories from music. I didn't realize, like, during the 90s, like, of course I know bands like Oasis and Blur, but there was this whole like answer to grunge, because grunge ruled the music world in the 90s, and some of those artists realized they couldn't compete with it. They tried to, but then that's when, like in the mid-90s, that's when bands like Oasis and Blur were born, and there was this whole like counter going on to what was, and it was very contrived and very made up by the media. And then some of the, you know, this Oasis versus Blur competition that was going on, it's amazing, because I know Oasis and Blur, but I didn't know what was actually going on. So it's a deep dive into it. And then just about, like I mentioned, Boys to Men, how Boys to Men really was the first boy band. I mean, like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC seem to hog the headlines, and that's who people think of, but it gives like credence to Boys to Men. And then there's a whole thing on auto-tune, like what T-Pain used to use, and how auto-tune like is considered a bad thing, and then, but you see how it was used for good in some way. So it's just like, it's things you didn't, stories within the story, you know. And like I said, when country goes pop, when it's the old school Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings, and then all of a sudden you have Shania Twain changing the way things are done, and how that all went over, and how it existed, and little interviews and vignettes that go with it. So it's really good. It's really good.
I will look forward to that. I like the history of handing down how things changed. We were discussing country music earlier. We never did get confirmation on David Hehaw or not David
Hehaw. No, we did not. He is enjoying his day off, as he should be.
Right. And we were discussing country music. They have words. Other songs, other genres have lyrics. And there's a difference when you talk about what country music used to be. And you've got somebody agreeing with you, the idea of Johnny Cash. 312, I love the Johnny Cash cover of Nine Inch Nails song. It is awesome.
Oh, yeah, no, he covered Hurt, and he did, and I think he died like a year after that, and just the way Cash like sang that song was just so soulful. It's not like it was, it's so different from the Nine Inch Nails version, And it and the Nine Inch Nails version is great too. But it was just, it's amazing that Cash was able to, he was talked into it, to doing it, and it turned out well. And he did a whole bunch of rock covers, but that was the, that's the one that stands out.
And Gridiron Assassin text to let me know that I have my, that I suck. My ZZ Top timeline is songs I would have wanted to hear. We're in the 80s, not in 1976 when that concert was played, but I'm sure I wouldn't have noticed anyways because it's loud and it's
well, I let that
top
go.
and there's livestock on stage. I remember seeing that in the doc and I go, oh my God, it's all right. So I had to, I'd still want to hear the songs. Maybe I could time travel.
Yeah. And for the 224, that sounds horrible, Grody. And I actually could see where you would think, because I'm naming these like artists like Shania Twain and Oasis and things like that, that on the surface it doesn't sound great, but it's actually, it's fascinating. And for me, it was educational. So, whatever, 224.
There's a A15. Yes, you know, you did not miss it. No, Luke, I Am Your Father is not on the AFI list. I don't know how, if that will rock Gary Grody's world, but it's not on there. 206 texter. The Tech Zone, by the way, is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Mark, somebody is concerned about your self-esteem. As I related the Chris Boghossian story about seeing you and Gonzo having lunch, and you and Gonzo were nice to Bogues and his then 8-year-old son. I don't see why Grody should be held in lower regard than Bryant or whomever. They all have the same number of World Series rings.
That's a good, hey, I'll good always point. Have that. That is,
yeah,
that is true.
Until
Chris Bryant's right. I'll get in trouble if I did that.
Yeah. All right. So we've discussed World Series rings. I think we need to close with wedding rings. I'm not sure the Trash Panda is paying attention now, since we've run through every stoplight and he has a break. We haven't heard that. So maybe he's paying attention, maybe not. But I think this mass Trash Panda wedding, officiated wedding, this, we have to make this happen somehow. It's a work in progress and we have to figure it out. So we'll go from World Series rings to wedding rings.
Good.
Of course, this is holiday suckage. What else would we do? Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Trash Panda, where would you get a Trash Panda costume to perform this mass wedding ceremony at one of our local baseball stadiums?
That's a good question. I guess Amazon, maybe? Or a costume store, maybe they have one somewhere? I don't know. I've never had to look for such a costume.
You think Shooter? You think your dad could kill enough that you could just have mom skin it and stitch it together and make you one?
Maybe. If he gets enough of them, yeah, maybe. That's a good idea, actually. I mean, you know, he doesn't, like, actively go out looking for them, but maybe if I commissioned him, like, hey, Dad, I need some raccoon pelts. So, you go help me out, bro.
How did you pronounce it?
Pronounce what?
The name of the varmint.
That animal.
Raccoon? What?
Did you think he said raccoon?
Uh-huh. I thought that's what he had said the first time we started discussing Trash Pandas. That's when we found out what Trash Pandas were, which is how he got his nickname. And now he's performing weddings. He's a licensed, or he's an ordained minister from the Universal Life Church.
And
he performed a wedding Saturday.
Yes, I did. But my instinct is actually just to say coon. That's how you know it's really country. Because, like, I actually have to stop myself from saying that every single time because I know people are going to laugh at me for pronouncing it that way.
Raccoon or raccoon?
Coon. Just coon.
Just, okay. All right. Well, anyways, raccoon. We want to do this. We think it's a good, really good side hustle, but we have to figure out how we could pull this off and that Gene and Gary Grody, for instance, could renew their vows and Sweet Alice and Shooter could renew their vows and then young couples could be married in just this mass Trash Panda wedding, officiated wedding
ceremony.
Well,
I mean, you don't need a, for the renewing vows thing, like, you don't need an officiant to do that. I mean, that's just,
But right. You want that. We want that. We want to be. We want to include everybody. We don't want to be exclusive. We want to be inclusive.
Expand
and
your empire.
That, yeah, right. We're trying to drum up some business for your side hustle. Okay. And with that, by the way,
I appreciate it. I'm just saying, like, if you don't need an officiant. I mean, a lot of people obviously choose to use a reverend or whatever, but like, you don't actually need one because you're renewing the vows is not a legal procedure, unlike actually right. marrying someone.
But that's why we want to make sure we cover everybody. We can have a renegade woodland creature performing this ceremony at
home
plate.
Maybe you could perform divorces at some point in time.
I did see. I think I can do baptisms. I don't know about divorces. I don't know what the deal with that is.
Trash pan to baptize.
Well, basically,
go down to Lake Michigan and do one right now if you want.
Performing a wedding ceremony is the start to divorce. So I think you're
got this is the first step.
That's the first step.
Yeah, right. It's a lifelong business for you. And number 13 on the AFI list, 100 great movie lines in 100 years. Love means never having to say you're sorry. So we're going to say thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for surviving this suckathon on the score. If nobody important listened, we'll be back next Saturday with Saturday Suckage on a Saturday. Coming up next, Rami Makhlouf from noon to 3, Big Ann Heron 3 to 6:30, and Cubs baseball as they try not to suck. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, thanks for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And
it wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
it. It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.